Thank you. Fellow counsel, and may it please the court, Robert Lichty on behalf of the appellant, Dr. Hauser. The standard review in this case is de novo review because you're interpreting a contract and the facts are contradicting. It's actually de novo review squared, and that is not only is your standard review de novo, but we submit that there has been no actual analysis done by either the arbitrator or by the court below. They each issued just one sentence declarations as to what they thought the law was, and that's what you have to review. This is in the background of the American rule, which everyone understands is each side pays their own attorney's fees. And the American rule states that if there is a directive against it, the directive shall be specific and clear. That's well established law. Then we go to the provision that's in question, and you all know what that says, and it's clear that it must be interpreted so that no clause is meaningless. And what we're saying in this appeal is that the first clause, each party shall pay its own attorney's fees, has been rendered meaningless, specifically by the arbitrator's own reasoning. He says, that's what it means, except if I say otherwise. Now, there's been some consternation by the other side, if I could phrase it that way, concerning the statute that applies in this case, that is the statute regarding arbitrators and their ability to award fees. And I pointed out in the briefing that the statute is very similar to the agreement that we have in our employment agreement. And the statute, as you know, was amended in 2004. Our agreement was dated 2009, so it applies to the new statute. But if you look at some of the older cases from the 1990s before 2004, you can see why the statute is written the way it is. For instance, in the Carson versus Payne Weber case, the issue there was whether the arbitrator had the authority to issue attorney's fees. And he thought he did because it was submitted under federal law, the NASD code, which provides that the arbitrator shall have the authority to provide for reasonable attorney's fees reimbursement in whole or in part as part of the remedy in accordance with applicable law. From what I can tell, that case turned on the phrase in accordance with applicable law because the applicable law was the 221 precursor, which is subsection 212. And that subsection said, unless otherwise provided in the agreement to arbitrate, the arbitrator's expenses and fees, together with other expenses, not including counsel fees, incurred in the conduct of the arbitration shall be paid as provided in the award. And it was determined in Carson that the federal rule, even though they were proceeding under the federal procedures, would not apply because it was not in accordance with that former subsection 212. So then the case turned on whether or not there was an agreement to arbitrate, or excuse me, agreement that the arbitrator award fees based upon the conduct of parties. And you know that this court said no, there was no such conduct of the parties that would set for that agreement.
Well, Mr. Lichty, you were citing that the parties could agree otherwise,
yes.
Agree out of the American rule.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So how is this not an agreement that the American rule would apply as a default unless the arbitrator stated otherwise?
Because of the phrasing of the agreement. The agreement said each side shall pay its own fees and costs.
Unless
the arbitrator makes it part of the award. So is there going to be any meaning to the first clause? The only way you can have meaning for the first clause is that the arbitrator has to have some control over him. Otherwise, the first clause is simply evaporates. It's just gone. And that really, in a nutshell, is exactly what we're saying. That in order to give some meaning to the first clause, you must figure out what as part of the award means. And we submit that the only way that makes any sense, especially in an employment contract, is as part of the award that would otherwise be awarded under the claim, which it tracks the new subsection 221. Now, with that, I had planned on making a very short argument so I could have more time for rebuttal. And I would like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal, unless, of course, there's questions.
Thank you.
Mr. Leckie, good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Chuck Weiss, attorney number 32912, representing the appellant Fort Collins Radiologic Associates, DBA, Advanced Medical Imaging Consultants. And if I may just refer to my client as AMIC throughout my comments, that would be helpful, so I don't have to say that mouthful. With me today is AMIC's former president, Dr. Peter Cobier, and in-house counsel, Diane Gross, and my colleague, Megan Rose, is sitting behind the counsel table who assisted with the briefing. I'd like to touch on the plain language of the provision at issue here before I get into the details of the parties' arguments. The fee provision is clear and unambiguous. Judge Meyer, the arbitrator here, was given power to award fees by the parties. Judge Williams was correct in confirming that award at the district court. We truly believe, as we've set forth in our briefing, that Dr. Halger's arguments are inappropriate in this case. He's litigating a different contract than is at issue. He's litigating a fee provision that is different than the one at issue. He's trying to manufacture some alternate meaning that is not there in the plain meaning of the one sentence provision that is at issue in this case. His argument in a nutshell, and he didn't make it here, he's reserving 10 minutes of rebuttal, so I'll go over his argument, which we need to address. He quotes page 14 of his opening brief, where the underlying claim itself does not have a provision for attorney's fees and costs. The parties unambiguously agreed in writing that each party was to bear its own fees and costs, which means the arbitrator didn't have the power to award fees or costs. The fee provision in this case says nothing of the sort. The fee provision can't be read that way. It can't be alternated by inserting different words, phrases, taking words out, which Dr. Halger does through about 20 pages of his briefing. He argues that this unambiguous agreement between the parties that the arbitrator could only award fees in connection with a claim that had its own fee provision, he says that is unambiguous and in writing. That is a disingenuous argument. There's no evidence of that. There's no reference to that language in the fee provision itself or the dispute resolution clause between the parties or the employment agreement or in the record before Your Honors today. What's happened here is the Colorado Uniform Arbitration Act says that the parties may agree that to give the arbitrator power to award fees. That's exactly what happened here in the fee provision at issue. As you can tell from reading the briefs and the record, this has been a hard-fought issue from the minute my client found out that Dr. Halger was secretly moonlighting with a competitor in violation of his contract and his fiduciary duties. Judge Meyer found in favor of my client on all of our claims and against Dr. Halger on all of his claims. We prevailed on every issue below. Judge Meyer awarded my client $336,000 in fees and costs. As Dr. Halger mentions in his briefing, he's already paid that amount to avoid additional interest. He did not challenge Judge Meyer's rulings on the merits. He did not challenge the reasonableness of the fee award that was granted. Before I get into the details of Dr. Halger's arguments, I want to raise briefly the motion to dismiss that we filed that the court allowed us to argue on appeal that the court does not even have jurisdiction in this case. The dispute resolution clause specifically states the decision of the arbitrator shall be final, non-appealable, and binding upon the parties, provided, however, that any party may seek an order vacating the decision of the arbitrator. It's funny, if you look at that language, it's the same as the fee provision at issue. It's a rule with an exception. Dr. Halger took advantage of the exception and filed his motion to vacate with the district judge, Judge Williams. But the parties specifically agreed that the case could not be appealed beyond the district court. both the Zellinger Court and the Colorado Supreme Court and Gorelick in the Tenth Circuit upheld the parties' agreement that they would not appeal past the trial court. So we submit you don't have jurisdiction to hear this appeal today. Getting to the merits.
So you're saying then that we have no jurisdiction to decide if the trial court was correct in enforcing the award?
I don't believe you have jurisdiction to overturn Judge Williams' ruling, his judgment in favor, confirming the award.
Even though there's a motion to vacate filed in conjunction with that?
Because the motion to vacate is allowed by the party's agreement. Specifically, that is the exception to the rule that it's final and non-appealable, just as in Zellinger and Gorelick, the parties agreed they would only appeal from the arbitrator to the trial court and no further.
But it seems to be contradictory to say you can't appeal a decision on a motion to vacate by agreement, but you can't appeal anything else.
The agreement says you allows Dr. Hauser to file one level of appeal, the motion to vacate. The Uniform Arbitration Act.
But that's not a motion, that's not really an appeal, is it? It's really an enforcement action.
It's the agreement the parties entered into that the courts I've cited have allowed the parties to limit by agreement, and this is arbitration.
I understand, Mr. Weiss, but my argument, my question to you is what does it mean when we say appeal? Because the motion to enforce the judgment and the motion to vacate aren't really appeals. They're just saying, you enforce this like you're supposed to do. An appeal is asking an appellate court or some appellate body to review what's been done by the arbitrator. We know arbitrators generally can do just about anything they want.
Yes, I agree with that point, Your Honor. I do believe that under if you construe the party's agreement with the Colorado Uniform Arbitration Act, the lack of jurisdiction argument makes sense. The Act says you can waive certain rights that are within the Act itself. It lists things you cannot waive, like a motion to vacate. It does not list the right to an appeal from an arbitrator's award, which is in Section 228 of the Uniform Arbitration Act. The right to appeal is not included within the things that can't be waived by agreement between the parties. And if I may move to Dr. Hauser's admission in this case, throughout his briefing, that Judge Meyer, the arbitrator, had power to award fees. Quote, Dr. Hauser has never stated that the agreement did not provide the power to award fees. That's in his reply brief at 8. That's very contrary to the issue he's presented to your honors. The issue statement that is, quote, whether the trial court erred in ruling that the arbitrator had power to award fees and costs. I think this admission that throughout his briefing he admits Judge Meyer had power to award fees is dispositive of the case under the Treadwell ruling that is throughout the parties' respective briefs. Treadwell dealt with an identical fee provision. The arbitrator awarded fees, but did not, nearly identical fee provision. The arbitrator awarded fees, but did not explain his reasoning. In Treadwell, the court ruled the agreement gave the power to decide fees and costs, and then went on to say issues that cannot be reviewed on appeal, quote, include the arbitrator's interpretation of the contract. Dr. Hauser here admits Judge Meyer had power to award fees. But then he goes on to argue Judge Meyer's, quote, reading of his powers is not reasonable. That's challenging Judge Meyer's reading of the contract, of the construction of the contract. And Treadwell goes on to say, where the arbitrator's decision concerns construction of the contract, the courts have no business overruling him, just because their interpretation of the contract, or Dr. Hauser's, is different than the arbitrator's. Courts may decline to confirm an arbitrator's award only in limited circumstances where there's an egregious departure from the party's arbitration provision. By admitting in his own briefing that Judge Meyer had power to award fees, Dr. Hauser has ended this case. In his own brief, he says, quote, this is his opening brief at page 18. Once the Treadwell Court made this observation that the parties, gave the arbitrator power to award fees, the result of the appeal was a foregone conclusion, because if the arbitrator has the power, there is very little a court may do in reviewing the exercise of that power. Our point on appeal with regard to this fee provision is that the plain language of the fee provision, by its plain meaning, the parties gave Judge Meyer discretion to award fees. Everyone here that has reviewed it so far agrees. Of course, Amick agrees he had power to award fees. Judge Meyer and Judge Williams agreed. Even Dr. Howard agreed that by its plain meaning, Judge Meyer had discretion to award fees, where the provision states, each party shall bear its own costs and fees associated with the arbitration, except that the arbitrator may allocate costs and fees as part of any award. Throughout this case, Dr. Halger repeatedly and affirmatively asked for his own fees. In every pleading, discovery response, his disclosures during the arbitration, even his closing brief, he asked for fees. How could he base a fee request unless he was relying on the contract between the parties? His only claims asserted in the arbitration were contract claims, not statutory employment claims. Those words aren't even mentioned in anything in the record. So the only reason he could ask for fees is if he was relying on the contract at issue, which he does at pages 121, 131, and throughout the record. There are many examples of him asking for his fees for prosecuting his breach of contract claims. This truly is a simple issue. Just by looking at the words and giving them their normal meaning, you should affirm Judge Meyer's award of fees and Judge Williams confirming that award. There should not be a tortured analysis where Dr. Halger changes words, adds words, to come up with a different meaning. He calls our argument weak throughout his briefing. Our argument isn't weak, it's simple. It's plain contract construction, looking at the words that are at issue. Sometimes it really is as simple as just reading the words and giving them their normal meaning. The parties agree on the applicable law here, the controlling legal principles of contract construction. Yes, we admit the fee provision gave Judge Meyer very broad discretion. Courts give arbitrators discretion the highest level of deference. The standard of review is among the narrowest known to law.
And Mr. Reese, I just want to confirm, I don't know if I misunderstand your argument, but when you're talking about the discretion of the arbitrator, do you concede that it is de novo review at this level?
Well, that's a...
Or you are going to abuse of discretion?
I think Dr. Halger's arguments have changed throughout this case. First, he said to Judge Meyer, you don't have discretion because the contract's ambiguous. Under Treadwell and that argument, I would say it possibly is an abuse of discretion review based on how Dr. Halger is arguing the case. But if we're only looking at whether Judge Meyer had authority, had discretion, was provided with power under this fee provision, I agree it's a de novo review.
Okay, thanks.
Judge Meyer here didn't do something crazy with the power he was given by the parties. He didn't award double fees. He didn't award fees to the losing party. He awarded fees to the party that won on every single substantive issue in the arbitration. If he had done something crazy, which Dr. Halger comes up with these hypotheticals, you have the Arbitration Act, Section 223, a motion to vacate, that has a number of things that would protect a party from such a ridiculous ruling by an arbitrator. This rule with an exception comes up in life every day. It comes up via the courts and statutes. A couple of examples of similar language, Civil Procedure Rule 7, quote, no other pleading shall be allowed except on order of the court. There's no guidance there. There's no discretion. There's absolute discretion. It's a rule with an exception. Your own rule regarding costs on appeal, Appellate Rule 39A, if a judgment is affirmed, costs shall be taxed against the appellant unless otherwise ordered. Same rule we have here. It's a rule with an exception. I'm running out of time. I want to point out, in addition to the fee provision being plain and unambiguous, both parties' requests for fees throughout this case independently authorized Judge Meyer to award fees. Both parties sought fees throughout the case, And that, according to the Holland case, should allow fees to be awarded, even if the parties hadn't agreed to as they did in their agreement. Finally, I'd like to point out that we were awarded attorney's fees in the district court by Judge Williams. The Colorado Uniform Arbitration Act allows those fees. There were two contested proceedings, motion to confirm and a motion to vacate. That award should be upheld as well. And we also asked for our attorney's fees and costs on appeal under the Barrett, Treadwell, and Magenis cases, which say if the underlying award was properly confirmed, the appellee is entitled to fees for successfully defending the arbitrator's award. That's all I have today, Your Honors. Thank you very much. We ask that you either dismiss the case for lack of jurisdiction or uphold Judge Myers and Judge Williams' rulings in this case. Thank you.
Thank you.
Small issue, just to correct the record. The opposing counsel said that his client prevailed on all the claims. It's not exactly true. There were claims that Dr. Hauser would get money when he dissolved his relationship with the partnership. And so in the end, I think it was an exchange set off. And so the exchange was like $10,000 to $20,000, something like that. The parties did not agree that there would be no appeal in this case. Under section 13-22-225, Colorado law is that the judgment in this case, the judgment that was entered by the district court, may be enforced as any other judgment. I submit that includes the appeal. I just don't see how in the world there's a waiver of appeal under the facts here, especially when it's silent. Now, didn't we agree that the arbitrator had, under certain circumstances, the power to award fees? Well, yes, of course. Going back to the sentence, each party shall bear its own costs and attorney's fees associated with the arbitration. That's what we think that's the main clause. Except that the arbitrator may allocate costs and attorney's fees as part of any award in the arbitration. Does he have the power under certain circumstances to award costs and fees? Yes, it says so clearly. Now, what does as part of any award mean? That's the issue. If as part of any award is read in the broadest way, well, just get rid of that first clause, that each party shall bear its own fees and costs, because that does not exist.
Counsel, I want to talk to you about an argument your opposing counsel made, and that is that your client claimed fees throughout.
Yes.
Didn't allege any statutory employment claims. So weren't you, in fact, relying on this provision as well?
No, it was thrown in. I had co-counsel, and I came in halfway through the case. He was doing that. He was for the responses to discovery, that type of thing. But I carefully reviewed all of that, and I see, did he cite this contract provision? He never once did.
He must have had some basis to allege a fees. There's no statutory basis.
Well, maybe a statutory basis, and the statutory basis would be if the facts develop and their side is frivolous and groundless, then we can move under that statute. I don't know what was in his mind. But I know that this contractual provision was never ever cited. And I also know that asking for attorney's fees and costs is boilerplate. It's thrown into everything. When I see that in answers, or I see it in complaints, do I really take it seriously? Not at that point. Let's see how the case plays out. It's thrown in there because if it's not thrown in there, then it's considered waived, and nobody wants to waive anything by mistake. So it's boilerplate. But the most important thing is the contract was never relied upon.
Well, if you didn't draft any of those pleadings, you're not aware of that, are you?
If I didn't? I reviewed all the pleadings.
But if someone else drafted it, you don't know what they were relying on when they drafted it.
No, I don't know what was in his head. All I know is what's on paper. And I know that what is on paper, what's in the record, there has been no citation by Mr. Hauser that he's relying upon this contractual provision, number one. Number two, even if he were, under the Carson case, it wouldn't be enough. It simply wouldn't be enough. That's the law. Uh, I think that Mr. Weiss had, he had moved to the point where he thought that this might be a your review of the arbitrator's discretion in understanding the words of this contract. But I think he moved off that at the end, so I don't have to address that. This is just like the case in Magennis, or in Trendwell, where this court has the power to review the powers of the arbitrator, and that's all you're reviewing. We didn't like the arbitrator's award in terms of the amount of fees. We can't challenge that. And so that was not challenged on appeal. And I point out that opposing counsel has not stated how this court can preserve each party shall bear its own costs and attorney's fees associated with the arbitration, how this court can preserve that without it becoming meaningless under opposing counsel's view of this contractual agreement.
How do you respond to the argument concerning the plethora of rules that we have that say no amendments shall be allowed except by order of court, etc.? Why isn't that the same kind of analysis that should be done here?
Because it's a part of this agreement of the parties.
Why is it different?
Because the parties say we don't want to pay each other's attorney's fees, but we realize that if the arbitrator is going to make them part of the award, like a Title VII age discrimination, FMLA case, something like that, we'll put into this agreement the ability to do that. Now, you know, under the Evans v. Jeff case, those fees can be waived. So if this read only, each party shall bear its own costs and attorney's fees associated with the arbitration, period, nothing else, then if a plaintiff were to prevail on a statutory claim that had attorney's fees attached to it under Evans v. Jeff, couldn't get those fees. And this also tracks the Colorado statute, you know, the new section 221, the one that was enacted in 2004, which says that the arbitrator can award fees if it's by agreement of the parties or if it's part of the claim. Now, I submit, I'm not asking that the court revise the agreement, but I submit that the agreement, because the word award could possibly be ambiguous, I don't think it is, but if this court finds that as part of any award is ambiguous, does that mean award or does that mean claim? And you can see how it could mean either one. Well, the reason why I also say it's ambiguous is when I first read this, it seemed perfectly clear to me what it meant. I didn't even think anything more of it. I said, oh, that doesn't apply in our case because we don't have a statutory claim. But if this court does find this ambiguous, and does award mean award or does it mean claim, I submit that that ambiguity is going to be interpreted against the drafter. And the drafter in this case was the employer. So in that case, then you say, well, it must be part of the claim. Just didn't draft it all that clearly. But I don't submit that you have to get that far, because I think it's fairly clear what it means. Otherwise, that first section just doesn't have any meaning. Because what this, under FCRA's or Amex, there's two names for it, under Amex interpretation, what the attorney fee provision was, it's read as follows. The arbitrator has discretion to award fees, period. The arbitrator has discretion to award fees. That's exactly what they're saying. And if that's the case, where did that first provision go? It evaporated. And you know the law that you have to give full importance to all the clauses in the agreement. You can't just write one out. And the only way that one makes any sense at all is by the interpretation that we're submitting, which makes perfect sense. It's not like we're trying to bend the language and say, yeah, this is just exception. It makes absolutely perfect sense. And if you were to give this to 10 law students, say, what do you think this means? You know, 10 law students knew something about these types of statutory claims, they would probably also go, oh, that's what it means. Let's move on to the next question. So it's not far-fetched at all. It's a very reasonable reading. While on the other hand, to say that the arbitrator has discretion to award fees, then that is an unreasonable reading, because it does get rid of the first agreement, the primary agreement, the shall agreement. Each party shall bear its own costs and fees. It gets rid of that. If there's no other questions, I've reached the end of my argument. I have a few seconds left. But I ask that the court reverse the district court's holding and remand for further findings consistent with our briefing that we be allowed to collect our attorney's fees for purposes of the appeal. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your arguments this afternoon. This case will stand submitted. We'll get your written opinion as soon as can.